Hi, hello and welcome. This is the Zonecast where we interview emerging professionals, entrepreneurs and academics. And today we have with us on the show Mufeed Kadura. He is the CEO and founder of Kinora Health. Hi, Mufeed. How are you? Welcome to the show.
Hi, Salman. Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Absolutely. I'm excited as well for this particular interview and learning more about your background and what you do. Can you share your professional and personal background?
Yeah, absolutely. As far as professional and personal, they tend to mix and become one sometimes. But I went to school for biology. I was a student at the University of Waterloo before starting the company. And my goal was to go to med school. That's what I thought I would do, become a doctor like my father. But in the process, I became a lot more interested in entrepreneurship and mainly technologies that can have a wide impact on people's health and people's lives. And that's how I ended up starting the company Kinora Health, which was formerly known as XVivo Labs.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk more about Kinora Health, what you do, and what technology you're trying to develop?
Absolutely. So at Kinora Health, we're bringing a test to the doctor's office that can allow them to assess their patient's allergies in under 30 minutes. And the goal here is to provide them with a technology and a solution where they can take a small sample of blood from a patient's finger. So it's literally a finger prick, much like a diabetic would do, and use that sample to insert it into a device. And from there, understand exactly what the patient is allergic to within a single visit. And the goal behind here is to, right now, there are a couple of ways that you can get tested for allergies. One of them is for you to get sent to the lab so you can get your blood draw done and you get the results in sometime later. And our goal here is to eliminate the need for that so that within a single visit, the doctor can have all the information they need to know exactly how to manage your allergies, but also put you on the most appropriate treatment plan if they deem that necessary.
Mm-hmm. So the test takes about 30 minutes?
How long? Yeah, exactly, about 30 minutes from the time you collect the blood to the time you get the result.
Mm-hmm. So a few drops that the physician can take out when the patient is in the clinic, and it takes about 30 minutes. How many allergies can you test for?
Right now, we're focused on life-threatening allergies. So the ones that life-threatening food allergies, particularly in kids as well. So when you think about that, you immediately think of peanut allergies.
Mm-hmm. So compared to existing solutions, how much time saving and efficiency are we talking about?
Yeah, it's quite tremendous. When you look at existing solutions, let's say the lab test, you have to get sent to the lab. The doctor has to write you a prescription or a requisition form. You go to the lab, you get your blood drawn, and you get your results in, it could be as early as 3 days later or as late as 2 or 3 weeks later. And then you have to go back to the doctor to, learn more about your allergies and have them explain their report to you. So with our device, it's under 30 minutes. So what ends up happening is a time savings of anywhere between three days to 3 weeks. And it's quite a change. And it also means that everything can happen in a single visit at the doctor's office, as opposed to you having to come back to the doctor's office someday later. And then, from another perspective too, it's hard to, a lot of patients don't end up going to the lab to begin with. They get the requisition form. They don't end up going to the lab. So all these people drop out of the healthcare system. They don't get their allergies fully diagnosed. And then by extension, they don't get their allergies treated.
Mm-hmm. So that is definitely a lot of time saving for the patient and also for the healthcare system. Is your product currently in the market?
So our product is not currently on the market. It's something I've learned is, as a medical company, a lot of things have to be right before you can launch a product. And so the product has to work, you know, 100%, or be, and then in addition to that, you have to work with the regulatory bodies like Health Canada and the FDA, and they have to give you the approval before you're allowed to sell it. So, yeah, to answer your question, we're not on the market yet. We're working on the product now.
So, when do you expect to be in the market?
Yeah, so that's a great question. A lot has to happen between that now and us getting on the market. We have to finalize development. We have to run studies, and we have to submit them to the regulatory bodies. And that, you know, like if you ask me, I'd love to see the product on the market in the next couple of years. And I would, to give you an exact date, it would be the regulatory bodies that would be able to determine that once we've satisfied all the requirements.
I'm curious how you came across this idea. And did you have like an allergy yourself? It was part of your research project in university. How did you stumble on this?
Yeah, so I've always been fascinated with science and biology, and being a student at the University of Waterloo, I wanted to work on problems that were worth solving and find big problems in healthcare. And when I was in university, I came across a group or an organization called Velocity, which is an entrepreneurship incubator that's based out of the University of Waterloo. And I started meeting like-minded people who were interested in problems in healthcare. And then we started talking about allergies and allergy testing. And we realized that allergy testing is, there's a lot of ways that you could improve the status or the state of allergy testing. And what we started doing from there is I started talking to people, mainly doctors in the allergy specialists, and trying to understand what tools they could use in their clinic to make their practice work better. And then also talking to people who have allergies or have children with allergies, it became really clear that there's a lot that we could bring here, and there's a lot of room to improve the tools. And for me, I actually do have allergies. I have seasonal allergies. So during the springtime, I become pretty useless. My allergies take over me, and I suffer from runny eyes and runny nose. And it's gotten better over the years, but it used to be horrible. And I never actually got my allergies checked out before I started working on this company because, you know, it just became very important for me to understand what allergies I was suffering from and how to manage them.
Mm-hmm. So to your knowledge, are you the only person or company working on this kind of test?
We're, to my knowledge, the only company working on a solution for blood-based allergy testing in the allergist's office, yeah.
That's pretty amazing. So I was reading online that you have raised a substantial amount of funding for this particular venture. Can you talk more about your fundraising experience, how much you have raised and from whom?
Absolutely. So we've raised a total of $11 million U.S. dollars to date. That came in two rounds. There was the seed round of $2 million U.S. dollars and the Series A of $9 million U.S. dollars. And that came from a variety of investors, both in Canada as well as the U.S. To name a few, we have raised money from Y Combinator. It's a startup accelerator that's based in the Valley in the Bay Area. And we also have other investors, including OS Fund, BDC Capital, as well as Box One Ventures, 1517, 50 Years Capital, and even an allergy specialist invested in us who's based in Canada as well, Dr. Colin Terpstra.
So when you pitched this particular idea to the investors, what was their response like? Were they excited? Was there some reluctance? Were they skeptical? How did they respond initially?
Yeah, initially, there's always to raise for a medical device company, it takes a special type of investor because a lot of investors, what they're used to seeing is more traditional companies like SaaS models or software companies or low-tech companies that are generating revenues. But it's a different play for a medical device company, because you do need to spend a lot of money on developing the product and getting it right before you're even allowed to sell it. So it definitely took some time to find the right investors, but they're super bullish on our vision, super excited about the progress we've made over the years, and they see the need for it. A lot of them have allergies, or their kids have allergies, and they know that it's what we're bringing here is a tool that can help them have a greater understanding of their allergies, make the doctor's lives easier and better, reduce the invasiveness, reduce the time that's needed to get the result, and also guide the best treatment decision for the patient.
Mm-hmm. Was it difficult for you? Because you obviously you're in a pre-revenue stage, and it might take you a few more years to before you actually start selling, and maybe even more time before you become profitable. So since the ROI may not be in the near future or near future, you think investors were difficult to persuade because of that, or were they more long-term oriented to begin with?
Yeah, so excellent question. Some investors who want short-term returns in the next, you know, 2 or 3 years didn't invest. And that's not to say anything bad about them. It's just each investor has a different time horizon and a different thing they're looking for. But the investors who came on board were all long-term thinkers. They're looking at this as what's Kinota going to do over the next 10 to 20 years, as opposed to what is it going to do over the next 12 months. And also a lot of them have seen that healthcare needs a lot of investment in order for us to have better tools and really improve our health. We need to invest money in it. And if investors have been fortunate enough to generate wealth during their lifetime, a lot of them are becoming investors who are purpose-driven. So how do they deploy their money in a place as well as a company that's going to improve the state of healthcare? So in a way, they're helping shape the future for them as well as the future for their kids, and improve healthcare by selecting companies that fit that model and supporting them until these companies bring their technologies to market and to the clinic.
How long did the whole fundraising experience take from start to finish?
It varies. It takes, I would say that to answer this question most simplistically, fundraising is always happening and it never stops. And like sometimes you hear stories about fundraising where it happens today and then a round is closed in 2 weeks. And that certainly happens. But for the most part, even when you're not fundraising, you're still talking to investors. You're still getting to know them. And you're still building those relationships. And in a way, a lot of investors won't invest in a company right away. They want to get to know you. They want to make sure that you're doing something good and you're hitting your milestones and growing. And then when they feel confident in all of that, then they decide to put their money in.
Because it is a pre-revenue company, was it difficult for you and the investors to agree on the valuation? And did you get the valuation that you believed in, or do you feel you had to compromise a bit?
Yeah, so that's to put a valuation on a company, sometimes there's a little bit of science to it and there's a little bit of an art. And then there's also some benchmarks and benchmark metrics. So to answer your question, thankfully there's a lot of tools right now that help me value the company as well as help investors value the company. For example, there's PitchBook, where you can see similar companies at similar stages and what they've raised, how much they've raised, and at what valuation, and what they achieved with those milestones. So I find that instead of arguing with the investor about the valuation, based on no data, gathering all the data on my side helped. And then it becomes a very logical conversation of here's how much we're raising. This is what we believe valuation is. And then, you know, even if we ended up negotiating, we don't end up too far away from the benchmarks that I've looked at.
Mm-hmm. So I guess to value the company, you did some research on similar medical device companies.
Exactly. And talk to I have a lot of friends who are also working on their either medical device companies or medical diagnostics companies. So talking to them and understanding, hey, what's the market paying right now for companies that are in a similar space to mine at this stage? And with the money, what milestones are expected from investors? And, you know, what also helps is it's also not a one-way conversation. As you're building relationships with investors, before you're even asking them for money, you can always ask them, hey, what are you looking for in terms of milestones? What do you want me to hit before the next fundraising round? And assuming I hit all of these, what would be the next logical step for me in terms of amount of money raised as well as valuation? And some of them, the good ones, will share that information with you and they'll say, you know what, Salman, this is what we look for. You want to hit milestone A, B, and C. And that usually puts your valuation at X million dollars.
Mm-hmm. Valuing pre-revenue companies is a particularly difficult because investors, I guess, or maybe some investors, maybe not all investors, they like to value the company by looking at your past sales. And I guess that method of valuing companies is something that works for them. It's convenient for them. It favors them to value a company based on previous experience. But then it makes it difficult for pre-revenue companies if you try to value them like that by saying, okay, you have $0 in sales, so you're going to lower your valuation. But some investors might try to do that, but it really affects companies which have a lot of potential and are working on a really big problem and are in the future will get into a big market and will make a lot of sales. So I guess you found a way, a different way to value the company, which is great.
Yeah, exactly. Even the model of valuing, putting a value on companies based on sales, I find that it doesn't really come into play. It depends. I don't know enough about software companies, but even for software companies, if you're having small revenues initially, investors, when they value the company, they're looking at more than just revenue. They're looking at what is your pipeline looking like for sales? What is your future potential? What is the total addressable market that you're going after? For example, if you're going after a market opportunity of 100 million, then you can't expect a high valuation because if you get 100% of the market, you'll be making $100 million a year, which is, it's impossible or like very, almost impossible and very unrealistic to expect. But if your total market is worth 10 billion and you have a strong pipeline of sales, but you don't have strong sales today, investors might give you a higher valuation because they see the potential and they see how big you can get.
Yeah, absolutely. So this brings me to the next question, which is how big is the market you're working on? Do you have some stats on how big the market is for allergies?
Yeah, the market for allergies is big. When you look at the market for allergy testing, it's close to $8 billion when we look at it. So it's one of those markets that no one really thinks about, because when you think about markets, you think about cancer and diabetes and, you know, big problems that everyone talks about. But allergies is like diamond in the rough. It's hidden. It's still a big problem and it's still a big market, but a lot of times it's not seen as such. So it creates a good opportunity.
Is that 8 billion in Canada?
No, in the US.
In the US, okay. And that's not specifically for peanut allergy. It's all allergies combined.
That's correct, yeah.
Okay. One of the difficult parts of the fundraising process can be the due diligence process.
Yeah.
So how was that process for you? Was it particularly difficult? Were there any negotiation challenges that came through or any specific questions from investors during that stage?
Yeah, due diligence is always an interesting part. And I've learned over the years to try to predict and anticipate what investors are going to want to know and what they will ask about, and do a lot of work ahead of time to prepare documents to support my claims. So if investors are going to want to say, okay, how big is your market and how do you know that? That's something that's going to come up in the due diligence. So I better have some document to explain and highlight why that's the case. If investors are going to have questions in due diligence, something that comes up is, okay, tell us about your IP and what patents you have. And so I better have that ready for them to look at. And I've noticed that in the due diligence process, that what makes due diligence interesting is that it's different for each investor. So each investor really looks for something different and they care about something completely different from one company to another. So for example, like one investor who comes from an accounting or finance background, all they might care about during the due diligence is, show me your projected sales. How are you going to grow your projected sales? And what's your go-to-market strategy? And is that believable? Versus an investor who's more of there are some investors who are scientists or doctors or PhDs that have become investors. And during the due diligence process, they're assuming that the market that you're working on is worth solving because in their mind, they've already worked it out to be worthwhile. And they don't care about that. They mostly care about the technology and the patents and how does it work? And do you have something that's strong and that's going to really differentiate you in the market? And that's what keeps due diligence interesting, is it's literally, I try to predict everything that an investor is going to ask or care about. In reality, there's always something that comes up that's like, oh, okay, you know, I didn't think you would ask that, but that's a great question. Let's talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is an interesting part of the fundraising process and a key part of the fundraising process. One thing that I had is, did you think about growing the business organically and retaining all the equity, or was this the best way of working on the business, is to have some kind of capital injection? And what do you plan to use the injection for?
Yeah. So the question is, do you to grow organically and keep all the equity versus to get capital injection? Medical devices, one thing I didn't realize when I started this company is how expensive it is to build a medical device, because you're building it right and it has to work and function and be safe and provide good data and good results. And it has to be a tool that's worthwhile and doctors will trust. And that comes, that's not cheap. So there's a couple of ways of funding a medical company. One way is to fundraise for it like we did. And then the other way is to bring a product to market with minimal investment and sell it and use the funds to funnel it into your main product. Mm-hmm. And then work on that main product slowly over the years until you have it finished, and then you eventually launch it. And then you grow revenues slowly and organically, and you become profitable as soon as you can. That was, that's a very, very valid approach, but it's a slow approach. And and as a team here, we're, even though we've been doing this for a few years, we're still impatient, and we would like to see this make a huge impact sooner rather than later. And you know, there's the cliche that everyone says, do you want the whole pie or do you want a smaller piece of a big pie?
I like how you describe this phrase as a cliche.
Yeah, everyone says it, but it's true. Like, you can own all of the business and be a very small player, or you can own a part of it, but be so, you know, such a dominant player in the market that you're actually making a big impact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess as you mentioned, like building a medical device is an expensive process. Research and development. Maybe you have a team of engineers or scientists or technicians working with you. And just building it, and it takes years to build, so you need some kind of capital. You may or may not be able to self-finance this whole process, which might take several years. So I guess in your case, it made sense to reach profitability sooner, but also to have the funds you need to build the product.
Exactly. That's 100% right.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. Well, Mufid, it has been very nice speaking with you, learning about yourself and your background and your company and your fundraising experience. So thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show.
It's my pleasure, Salman, and thank you so much for having me on the show as well.
Absolutely. You want to share your website? How can people learn more about your company and your product?
Yeah, it's www.kenotahealth. Actually, no, it's just Kenota. Kenota, KENOTA.com.
All right, perfect. Listeners, I hope you enjoyed this episode and you get a chance to learn from Mufid and his story about innovation and how he's working on such an amazing technology that will help make the whole allergy testing process much simpler and much more efficient. And as you mentioned, you can visit his website if you need more information or if you have any more questions. And thank you so much for listening to Zonecast, and stay tuned for more episodes.